Welcome to the Phil and Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:28 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is March 24th. And I thought we'd kick off with financial conditions because they tightened all the way through from the beginning of this year until last week and then started to loosen again. It does beg the question, what's in this measure? And they don't, well, Goldman Sachs, who produces it, doesn't disclose that. But if we were thinking about what would anybody put in financial conditions? Well, if I was creating one of these indices, I would probably put in some money market rates, some bond rates, interest rates, and then also look at equities. And the chances are that the rebound we've had in equities has contributed to financial conditions loosening, because asset price appreciation creates more profits, more money, and therefore more liquidity. So it's a bit of a self-feeding trend. So when we look at this, it's also, I think, rather interesting that the measure has encountered resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the lower side of its overhead trading range. So it's a natural area where we might get a little bit of pause and consolidation. But there is no denying that the downtrend from that spiky peak at the beginning of 2020 has certainly been broken. So we may be getting some respite here, and that's very much in line with the short covering rally that's been underway on Wall Street. I posted an article today from Pantera Capital, which focuses on the crypto markets. But there were a couple of snippets in there that focused on the Fed's balance sheet and what inflation means, and of course they were using that as an argument for why anybody would want to own Bitcoin, because it's a limited supply argument, and of course that also applies to gold or indeed many commodities. But Bitcoin is certainly strengthening, and it's coming up to test the upper side of this wedgy type formation that's been forming. Generally speaking, these wedges tend to break out in very emphatic fashion. And Bitcoin has been building support around this 35,000 level and mostly failing to sustain moves below 40,000 since the beginning of this year. So that's, I think, a rather important development. And when we think about what's going on in markets, there's certainly this, and it might be hard to rationalize, but there's certainly a bid underway for stocks as a hedge against rising yields. So when we think about the weakness that we saw on stocks yesterday, it coincided with a bid coming through for bond prices and yields coming back down. Well, the yield was in positive territory today, but it hasn't quite held the advance, and stocks were steady. The primary challenge for bond investors is that long-dated yields are really rising very quickly, so they're sustaining losses that they're not accustomed to, but 3-month yields aren't going anywhere, and they're still around 47 basis points. Now, when we think about the Fed funds rate, it's obviously quoted as a spread, and they always then, the market quotes it as the higher end of that spread. So it's at 50 basis points. So the bond market is not pricing in the potential that there are going to be interest rate hikes, but it's certainly been priced in the futures market. So this is more indicative of massive demand for duration hedging. So you hedge your duration on the one hand by just simply cutting it out entirely and buying near cash items like 3-month bills. But then you can also buy other types of inflation hedging or duration hedging and just go for equities, because equities have the potential to return capital to investors. So you get dividends, you get share buybacks, you get efforts to raise prices. So in many respects, an equity is sort of like a tip that if the way that tip yields are calculated, it's simply that if inflation goes up, well then your par value for your bond goes up as well. Well, the par value for your equity goes up whenever they decide to pay you a dividend. And or if they reduce the number of shares, it has much the same effect. So investors are favoring the kinds of companies that have got strong balance sheets, even better if they have pricing power, and doubly better if they have a record of increasing dividends or buying back shares. So the dividend aristocrats are now continuing to steady from the lower side of the range, and they have been, I think, rather admirably strong in this corrective phase that's been underway. The ETF peaked at 100, found support around 90, and is now has already paired about half of the decline. Then the buyback achievers, well, they should also be favored by investors because they offer some measure of protection against inflationary pressures as well. But the challenge here is that many of the buyback achievers don't have quite the same record of paying dividends. And then one of the challenges with the buybacks is that companies don't necessarily have to abide by them, and that many companies heading into 2020 had been borrowing money to buy back their shares and had very levered balance sheets. But nonetheless, at least the ETF is holding the region of the lows and certainly hasn't been pulling back in nearly the same fashion as the wider market. So, for example, when we look at the S&P 500, it has rebounded and it has paired about half of its decline as well. But it has also got work to do in order to repair the consistency characteristics. I still think that it is more likely than not that we're going to range more than trend. And certainly, we've had this big upward dynamic, and it is attempting to follow through on the upside in here this week. So we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, and that suggests that the benefit of the doubt can be given to the upside. But the effects of rising interest rates, tightening global liquidity, and high commodity prices are cumulative. So the purchasing managers index has probably peaked. Manufacturing data is starting to point towards less activity. There was a significant inventory build at the end of last year, so that's also going to weigh on orders in the early part of this year. And it suggests that growth is going to moderate. Well, the primary reason that people, our investors, are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to equities, even as bond yields rise, is because of strong company earnings. If anything were to happen to the outlook for earnings, then that's going to act as a headwind for their prices. And I think that the logical comparison is with what we saw in 2018. This was also a period of time where we had quantitative tightening. So we had a 10% pullback at the beginning of the year, then we had a good size rebound, a lot of messing about. It had pushed on to new highs by September, and then experienced a 20% pullback because the Federal Reserve took that as a vote of confidence in its suite of policies, which were simultaneously raising rates and reducing the size of the balance sheet simultaneously, which is what they're looking to do now. And that was one of the, I thought, interesting points from that Pantera report, was that they highlighted the fact that about 20% of the Fed's balance sheet has a maturity within the next 12 months. So if they want to reduce the size of the balance sheet, and it's almost at 9 billion, but not all of that has got not all of it is government bonds. There's a good number of mortgage bonds in there as well. But they could easily take a trillion out of circulation this year just by letting those near dated securities run off. That's also going to create liquidity problems. It's already a very thin market, and this is something that we're seeing both in the bond markets and in the commodity markets, that there's a lack of liquidity. Well, when we are in a quantitative tightening phase, then the Federal Reserve is selling off bonds. And then, of course, there's the question of whether the federal government is going to engage in additional stimulative measures. But it's not looking especially likely, and particularly in an election year. So that's also going to contribute to fewer bonds being issued. So the Fed will be buying fewer, the government will be issuing fewer, and there'll still be at least some demand, because the bond funds and insurance companies need to own bonds, and yields are becoming more attractive as they rise. But we're moving into a progressively more illiquid environment. And then we can also see that because of the extraordinary volatility that has become commonplace in the equity markets, that liquidity conditions are also changing here. So nickel prices are still rebounding, but they've been subject to extraordinary volatility. And natural gas prices have also been steadying over the course of the last week, but have been also subject to really extraordinary volatility. And of course, lumber, which is not an especially liquid market to begin with, has also been the subject of really extraordinary volatility. But so at least some of these prices are beginning to moderate. And of course, the big question is what's going to happen with oil prices. And we've had a big surge in oil, and it got up to $140, and it was a little softer in here today. And we're definitely in an illiquid market, and not less, it's not simply that there are fewer futures being traded. It's also that we have got lower inventories of lots of commodities as well. What that means is that even small changes to supply can have a really outsized effect on prices. We've seen, and that's of course why we've had such incredible volatility right across the commodity complex. But when we look at the backwardation for Brent crude, then we're being presented with at least some evidence that some of the worst might be behind us, because it's exceptionally rare for this backwardation chart. So it's just simply taking the front month and then taking the second month away from it. It's very unusual that we would have that spread getting anywhere close to $4. And we're currently at $3.39. So there was one occasion back in 2011, intraday, where we got up to that spread and then it collapsed immediately afterwards. So this is a different environment, in that this high backwardation has been sustained, but we now have two lower highs. So it does suggest that some of the pressure is coming off. But of course, that is 100% dependent on the geopolitical situation not becoming progressively more unstable. And obviously there are still risks. And the siege of Mariupol in Ukraine is probably going to go down in history as one of the most dire from a humanitarian perspective. And you have NATO warning the markets and warning governments that Russia might begin to use chemical, biological, or tactical nuclear weapons. And that is as much about signaling what the risks are as it is about telling the world that they don't want to push Russia into further escalation. That NATO appears to want to create some form of status quo. And unfortunately for Ukraine, that probably means that we're looking at the kind of solution that Finland had to accept in the 1940s. They gave up territory to the Soviet Union and subsequently became an independent country that was not allowed to join NATO, but ultimately did join the EU. And I think Russia's objective seems to be clear. They want, at a minimum, to have a land bridge to Crimea. And if they can secure the entire Black Sea coastline, then that would be a bonus. But I think that that's probably their minimum requirement, that they want to have a land bridge to Crimea. So if that's as far as it goes, then the market might already be beginning to price that in. So there's the potential, at least, that we've seen oil prices go as high as they're going to go. Now, if that is indeed the case, well, then some of the inflationary pressures will begin to moderate. If oil starts to come down, then it will take some of the pressure off of the wider commodity markets. And Russia has reopened its stock market in here today. So they did what was necessary to support the market. And they bought about $10 billion worth of domestic equities through their sovereign wealth fund in order to support the price. So it looks like at least they're going to spend some money to try and stabilize the market. And of course, they have stopped short selling. There will, of course, be forced liquidations because some Western holders will no longer be allowed to hold positions, or at least will not like to be seen to be holding positions in Russian equities. But they're trading at really low valuations. When we look at, for example, Sberbank, its price-to-sales ratio is at 0.7. And its total loans to total deposits is quite high now because it's really had to go through some extraordinary stress. But its price to book is at about half of one, and then its dividend yield is 13%. When we think about Norilsk Nickel, it's the major producer of nickel, still not trading on the US markets and also not trading on the UK markets. But that doesn't mean the company has stopped existing. And it represents a significant supplier of nickel and, of course, palladium. And palladium prices, having pulled back violently, are at least stabilizing. And then, of course, we have gold, because gold prices continue to stabilize above $1,900 and were in positive territory again in here today. As equities rebound and bond yields move higher, then equities are attracting leverage and are certainly susceptible to slowing growth. Whereas gold is historically a monetary metal, and with inflation where it is relative to interest rates, and we have this environment where this financial repression is about to disappear, well then gold generally tends to attract interest in that kind of environment. So it looks like a consolidation in the region of the all-time peak and bouncing from the upper side of the underlying range. So I think it is more likely than not that gold will continue to build support around this area. We might have a couple of months of ranging between here and the all-time peak, and then subsequently prices will break on the upside. And silver is also firming within its first step above the base. So we're in an environment where it's reasonable to anticipate that silver will outperform. It hasn't quite broken out yet, but this looks like a first step above the base, which is a precursor to a more consistent trending environment overall. And then, regardless of what happens, the world is now going to become progressively more focused on energy independence, and that's really a green light for copper. But copper prices continue to pause here in the region of the upper side of this range. So we're in an environment here where there's still a lot of uncertainty, and some of the big questions outstanding are what's going to happen with the US dollar? Because if bond yields are rising like this, then the USA has got progressively higher yields than a lot of the rest of the world. And when that happens, it's also generally a precursor to a recession. So the challenge really here is that the Federal Reserve is trying to stamp out inflation, and it is more likely than not that they will use quantitative tightening as a way of doing that. That's going to withdraw liquidity. That's generally also positive for the dollar, but it's also going to slow growth. And that is going to have a negative effect ultimately on stocks. And then we're likely to have an inverted yield curve and a recession evolving subsequently. So it's very likely that this cycle that began in March of 2020 is going to be quite short. And the yield curve is currently around 23 basis points. So it has steadied a little over the last few days, but nothing on this chart indicates that this pattern of compression isn't going to continue. And when we look at the swap spread and the 2-10s swap spread, well, this is also contracting. And we're down now to 2 basis points. So this is also another way of looking at the yield curve. So what we're seeing is that the yield curves across the board, whether it is treasuries or swaps or high yield, are all compressing. We're seeing that measures like the TED spread are starting to rise, which is really an indication of stress within the financial sector or a lack of trust. And it certainly this has at least peaked in the short term. So we're on, I think the only way to describe it is tenterhooks, that we've had enough of volatility and enough of a setback to alert investors to risk, but not so much of a setback that it has really alarmed people that there is a recession imminent. But we are heading in that direction, and the further we go down the road in the form of quantitative tightening, the greater the likelihood is that there's going to be significant negative surprises in terms of growth. That's the primary reason why I've been of the opinion that the Federal Reserve isn't going to have an exceptionally difficult time raising rates, because I think that the market is much more interest rate sensitive than it is currently letting on. So that, I think, is something that we all need to pay attention to, even as some sectors do substantially better than others because they have inflation hedging characteristics. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.